Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
It's a Friday. All across Wisconsin, hope you have good weekend plans ahead of you. Pat Kreitlow here. It's Up North News. Luke Mathis is our producer. Luke and I last week invented Dad Shirt Friday and, you know, thought we'd get that hashtag going and everybody would wear their dad shirts. And then Luke went and, you know, threw sand in the radiator at this point because we're now joined by our friend, Dr. Kristen Lyerly. And Kristen, what announcement did you make as soon as we saw you?
I said, hey, everybody, look what I've got. My Hawaiian shirt.
Her Hawaiian shirt, Luke, thanks to you. And then we're joined as well by Dr. Ann Helms, a critical care neurologist in Milwaukee. She shows up on her screen in a Hawaiian shirt and was told she had 3 minutes to find a Hawaiian shirt. So thanks again, Luke, for ruining our first official edition of Dad Shirt Friday.
See, I thought you told me that the Venn diagram included Hawaiian shirts in the Dad Shirt Venn diagram. So
it's a Venn diagram. They're not one circle.
No, but there's overlap. So it could qualify as both. I told you last week, I gave the disclaimer. I'm not a father yet. I am a godfather, but I am not a father. So I'm learning in this process myself, Pat.
Well, right now, as far as a godfather goes, you're part three of the godfather. So you got some work to do to become one of the classics here. And Dr. Helms, is giving us a not a Hawaiian background, but you're catering right to the host here who used to live on Grand Cayman, and you're saying that's a Cayman Island background you've got as well. Mm-hmm. So by travel or just by
went scuba diving in for spring break.
That would be the place to do it. And Kristen's usual partner in crime, Kirk Bankstead, was on earlier to talk about Mandela Mash, the new brew that's coming out. And so, Kristen, I imagine we will see you doing product placement posts on Facebook very soon with that.
100%. As soon as Kirk gets me some free beer.
it's always got to be free beer for Kristen because of the strong work that she does with him to help with the Minocqua Brewing Company Super PAC. On this Friday morning, we we've covered a lot of ground, especially this week, getting into the governor's race and the U.S. Senate race. So we'll get more about, you know, Mandela Barnes and going up against Ron Johnson a little bit later on. But the prospect of a Tim Michaels winning the governor's race is of concern for lots of reasons, not the least of which, as we said earlier in the week, is the prospect that, you know, somebody, you know, that a Connecticut businessman could become Wisconsin governor. There's something you don't see every day. But in the sense that he still has or is conveying a connection to Wisconsin, his being governor of Wisconsin would have ramifications in many areas, not the least of which is women's health, which is why Dr. Ann Helms and Dr. Kristen Lyerly are joining us. They are active with the Committee to Protect Healthcare, and they were part of a panel yesterday that talked about what a Tim Michaels candidacy or a governorship would mean for somebody who said that the state's 1849 ban on abortion, again, 1849, mirrors his thinking, which, as you know, yesterday I called out as a lie. You can't say it mirrors, because clearly you haven't read it, or you would know that it mirrors nobody's opinion because some of the language is so antiquated, it's not clear exactly what it means. So really, he's just reaching for something convenient. And both of these docs talked yesterday a bit about it. And Kristen, we've discussed this repeatedly. So I'm going to start with Dr. Helms. Just from an overall standpoint, when you opened your remarks yesterday, as a neurologist, what does it mean to have a potential governor who believes there needs to be no changes in the repeal of Roe v. Wade and an 1849 ban?
Well, I think what is really important to understand is that it doesn't just sit in OB-GYN. It doesn't just sit in women's health. This is about government intruding into healthcare decision making for everybody. So that instead of basing our decision making on good medical data, the studies and what they've shown, what works, what doesn't, we're basing it on politics that don't apply to any particular situation and don't care what your personal values are. And as somebody who does critical care neurology, I deal on the other end a lot of the time. I deal with a lot of end of life issues, with quality of life issues, with very personal decisions that people make that would be the next step here.
You're talking about what really caught my ear in the panel discussion yesterday was you saying that this would essentially force cancer patients to forego some of their care. What do you mean by that?
Well, if somebody is pregnant and they discover they have, say, breast cancer, the treatment for that would be lethal to the fetus. So the choice, if you're saying you have to continue that pregnancy, is to say you have to wait 6 months or whatever to start that chemotherapy, to start that treatment. And the one thing we know about cancer is the sooner you start treatment, the better off you are, the more likely you are to survive. So the likelihood of delaying it that long to complete the pregnancy and then start treatment would likely lead to a lethal outcome. The woman would die from the cancer.
And that's where we're going to talk on the other side of this break more about the timeliness, how time is of the essence, whether we're talking about cancer care or women's health care in a troubled pregnancy, and much more. Coming up after this, you're up north.
Providing your news talk and sports, we are Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 FM and WXCO, 1230 AM.
Tiny bubbles. Seriously, Luke, this is what you brought us through. We're doing Hawaiian Don Ho music because
I don't think there's cockatoos in Hawaii though, and I have like they're white cockatoos or something on my shirt. I don't think it's Hawaiian. I got it for my brother got married in Cabo last April, and so I needed like some nice like linen shirts to go into the 90 to 100 degree heat to sit by the pool, and this is what I got. And
so clearly next week we will be getting somebody booked who is a fashion expert to talk about what actually constitutes a dad shirt, and when does it become a Hawaiian shirt? When does it become a bowling shirt? And when does it, in Kristen's case, become something you got off the pile at Ragstock? But it matches your Packer jersey. So we'll let that slide. We are talking with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, Dr. Ann Helms, Dr. Lyerly is an OBGYN. Dr. Helms is a critical care neurologist. Because we are trying to, they are trying to, especially through the Committee to Protect Healthcare, trying to get people to understand that the repeal of reproductive rights in Roe v. Wade and going even further with strict bans is not just interfering in medicine. It is quite real. The life or death connotations that may come of that. You were joined by a couple of other physicians as well. And Kristen, I'll come to you on one of these. And that is that, and actually you mentioned this as well, when we're talking about the life of the mother and whether the life of the mother language is clear enough in the current 1849 ban or in anything else, that's the kind of thing that, again, that can turn on a dime. Mm-hmm. In terms of, when are we talking about life of the mother versus, just a bad day?
Yeah. Unfortunately, these people don't have meters on them that tell us, hey, it's time to intervene. So we have to be able to use our clinical judgment. And if there's one thing an obstetrician knows about taking care of a pregnant person, it's that they look good. They look stable. Even when we know they have a lot of risk factors and we're watching them very closely, they tend to be okay until they're not. And that can turn so quickly. And in those cases, we need to act often within minutes. We don't have time to hem and haw about what's happening here. And I think that's one of the most difficult things for people to understand. When we're trying to assess someone's risk factors, we're guessing, but we're using all of the information, all of the evidence we have, as well as the patient's values and desires and emotional status and everything else. We're trying to take holistic care of our patients. All of that makes these decisions incredibly complex. And even for those of us with medical training, we have a hard time figuring out that perfect time to deliver a patient. But a lawyer or a politician like Tim Michaels, there's no way that he can even begin to understand the complexities present here. And he's demonstrated that as he's flip-flopped on some of these very delicate issues.
And not only just in something like, you know, a pregnancy where conditions can change quickly, but Dr. Helms, it was pointed out by Dr. Jill Masana yesterday as well, that when it comes to infections and sepsis and things like that, again, infections aren't something that immediately present themselves. And there are shades of gray that you have to deal with as a neurologist that, you know, no politician could even pretend to understand.
No, I mean, one of the things that's an area of specialty for me is women's vascular health. So I deal with a woman who's had a history of stroke, who has a pregnancy, or someone who develops a stroke during pregnancy is one of the areas of specialty for me. So if somebody has had those sorts of issues, a pregnancy may be extraordinarily risky. And going into it, there's going to be a lot of feelings that any individual patient is going to have. And if something were to happen during that pregnancy, it's a lot better to have the ability to treat that patient how they would want to be treated than to have to check the laws to see what I'm allowed to do.
Kristen, I asked the question yesterday about what, and you, I'm going to show my age here, what I'm going to call Hawkeye Pierce syndrome, but somebody could just as easily pick the doctor from House or a whole host of doctors on TV. And the thinking is that that's what every doctor is, this, you know, rebellious, you know, scamp who will always find a way around the rules to do what is necessary. It's a line of thinking that says, look, you know, these doctors are just complaining. There's actually no need to change the rules because, you know, they have the ultimate discretion and judgment, and they will do whatever it is they need to do because, you know, that's what Hawkeye would do on MASH or whatever. And the fact of the matter is, as I know from being married to a physician, there are very strict rules and ethical standards and the law that must be followed that actually doctors very much have metaphorical handcuffs on with these kinds of situations.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting much more of a radar vibe from you looking at you on Facebook with this.
Henry Blake, I think, is probably what you're really looking for here. Yeah.
As long as it's not... Larry Linville.
No, but you're right. Like, we all love a good story. We all love a good outcome. We all love to see the hero win in the end, especially when they're breaking the rules and doing the right things in a difficult situation. But we all live in reality too. And these complicated situations, I mean, Dr. Helms mentioned a patient with a history of stroke. When someone shows up in my office who's had a history of stroke in her typically 20s or 30s, because that's when most women are pregnant, that is a whole different kind of pregnancy management scenario. Mm-hmm. And we are really seriously early on in pregnancy when the risks aren't as great, because the more pregnant you are, the riskier it gets. So early on, we're talking about blood thinners and premature delivery and all of these outcomes that, when we're thinking as people and we're trying to build our families and we're thinking about the joyful side of pregnancy, we don't think about all of these details, but they happen. These stories mm-hmm. are not uncommon. Just yesterday, I spoke with a woman who had a history of like 7 abdominal surgeries her gut was malrotated. When she was an embryo, everything twisted in the wrong direction. So inside of her, everything is very different and confusing. Her bowels don't work the way that people's bowels typically work. So she actually has a pacer inside of her body. And I'm sharing this information because a lot of people probably have never heard of these things, mm-hmm. but that's our bread and butter. Mm-hmm. That's what we deal with. So this is a woman who has always wanted to have a family, but she also recognizes that her machinery makes pregnancy very dangerous for her. And we were talking about a pregnancy termination, and she was sharing her very complicated feelings, but also her knowledge that as someone in a committed relationship with a husband who's always wanted this, she recognizes that this just isn't the right path. And we have to respect people's decisions. And the funny thing about Tim Michaels is that he's all about freedom. He's had the freedom tour. But he's not about our freedoms. He's not about our personal freedoms to make our individual decisions about our own bodies. And I find that so incredibly bizarre.
Well, because
let me jump in for a second on what Pat was just asking about the do doctors kind of skirt the rules. And one of the other things that I do is sit on the hospital ethics committee. We had, critical powwows to talk about how are we going to approach this? What are we going to do? And no one is going to be skirting this law and risking going to prison. I mean, they're not talking about getting you a reprimand or taking away your medical license. They're talking about putting doctors in prison, some places for life, for providing healthcare that a patient needs. This is a new frontier. This has never really been done, to say we're going to outlaw something that is normal, approved medical care to keep people alive and healthy. And that is new. We've never seen this before. So no one knows what's really going to happen. And it's terrifying for the patients and for the doctors.
Well, and this is not malpractice. You know, like you listen to people talk about malpractice, doctors and patients, and like malpractice happens, but this is not malpractice. Mm-hmm. You can be practicing appropriately, not malpractice, and still receive a criminal charge that would put you in jail in Wisconsin.
And along the same lines, and kind of in the vein of the, the whole rebel myth that's out there, is something that Governor Evers said that made a lot of people happy, but then there was kind of that cold splash of reality that came along with it. And it was when Governor Evers said, to great cheers, I know, because he said it at the state Democratic convention, and I was in the hall at the time, was that, he would grant clemency to any doctors who were prosecuted under this law. But Dr. Helms, it's not that easy.
There's a problem. Yeah. There's a problem because the statute of limitation is 6 years. And the term that Governor Evers has left is not that long. And, Josh Call said he would never prosecute, but also he has a term that isn't long enough for us to be sure that we'd be protected. And so no one is availing themselves of that, clemency. Nobody I know in the state, and I've obviously been in contact with a lot of people. Dr. Lyerly probably knows more, but I don't know of anybody who is flouting the law because the consequences are extraordinary.
But I think the governor certainly had, the right idea. I know you spoke, Kristen, with him this week, where to at least get that sentiment out there that there will be, people in public office like him who will, look for whatever paths are available. That certainly is one path that's available to him, but both he and Josh Call, I think, would be the first to tell you or any of us, the most secure path is to, win re-election.
Oh, of course. It's absolutely fundamental that the two of them get reelected. And I think they are trying to do everything that they can within the scope of their office, but there's very little that they can do to truly protect us right now. And I have to say, Governor Evers, this is personal for Governor Evers. Many people don't know this, but his daughter is an obstetrician gynecologist in Madison. We worked together when I was training. He has 8 granddaughters. This to him is not a political issue. This is 100% an issue of freedom and women's rights.
Mm-hmm. And on the Josh Call side of things, state attorney general, you have Eric Toney as the new nominee. And we spoke the other day about how, as Fond du Lac County District Attorney, the overzealous, to put it mildly, prosecution of a woman for mistakenly putting down an address on her voter registration and wanting to charge her with felony voter fraud. Somebody who, by the way, registered to vote because she wanted to vote for Donald Trump. If that's what he'll do with one woman making a mistake registering to vote, one can only imagine what Eric Toney is going to be talking about doing if he's elected Attorney General, Kristen.
It is just the continuation of this ridiculous, bizarre branch of not, they're not even Republicans. They're just this weird Trump cult that have completely lost touch with reality and common sense. And I think that just makes the problem even worse. Most of us recognize that this is not right. And we want to go back to a time when you could go borrow a cup of sugar from your neighbor, but we got to get back to that.
There are, yeah, bigger battles to fight right now. Kristen Lierley and Ann Helms will join us on the other side of this break. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're Up North.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Kind of hoping for rainbows later, but right now, looking at the radar, the entire eastern half of Wisconsin is getting rain, basically just right down 51. And on the other side, Kristen tells me in Green Bay, it's as sunny as it gets out there, huh?
It's always sunny on Packer Day.
Well, that's what time is the game? And I wonder how rainy, you might have some rainy conditions for the game, perhaps.
So it's 7 o'clock in San Francisco.
Oh, is it in San Francisco? Okay.
But we're still wearing green and gold because it's...
Well, here's my... Here's another one of those weird confessions and a hill that I'll die on. I pay zero attention to preseason football. I don't. I just, you know, for when the season opens, hit me up. But the practices and everything else is like when a game is on, I want to watch the game is real. You know, it really means something. So I'm happy, you know, that the Packers are getting going here. But it also doesn't help that, you know, Aaron Rodgers is, you know, drinking his hallucinogenic tea now. And by the way, before we get back to our discussion with the doctors here on Dr. Lee Matters, Luke, do you have the audio of that little girl that was serving pretend tea to the Packer players at Lambeau Field? I think it was last week, but we had it in our newsletter yesterday.
So sweet.
Oh, she was just adorable. She's like 2 years old in her little Packer cheerleader outfit. And the parents or the mom were bringing her to practice. She wanted to bring along her pretend tea set. And so reaching through like the little bike racks, you know, that make the dividers, you know, she wanted to see. And so, and the Packer players, to their great credit, did. Do you have that handy, Luke?
Oh. Yeah. That was good. That was great. Good job.
Good practice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I didn't want to step on her, but I was hoping we could hear you. She's just delightful when you hear her go, "Do you want some tea?"
And it was just, I gotta tell you, so I know I'm Packer crazy because I'm from here and this is just part of it, but if you've never been to that part of training camp where the kids get on, they give the players their bikes. And the players like have no idea, you know, sometimes it's little bikes on training wheels. Sometimes it's a big wheel. Sometimes it's an actual bike, but just to see the players and the kids interacting and having conversations and that warmth with the fans that just come out, it is really an incredibly beautiful community building experience and it's free. They're right there. So I really encourage people to come and just appreciate that about the culture of this great state up north.
It is that whole, you know, diverse nature of everything. And in this case, you know, athletes that, you know, say before a baseball game, some guys will come out and sign baseballs for the kids and whatnot. So we do. We talk about the prima donnas all the time. And we don't talk nearly enough about the ones who are personal and personable. Much like a lot of doctors I know, I have two very personable ones here. There's no prima donna physicians. In this bunch, Dr. Ann Helms, neurologist, Dr. Kristen Lierley, an OBGYN. And we have been talking about, you know, what are the healthcare ramifications for the November election? And that's still kind of a weird thing to talk about. We're used to talking about, you know, the economic ramifications of something, you know, is a bill going to pass for, you know, infrastructure or school spending? And these instead are we're getting right into the very details, Dr. Helms, to the point of medications. And again, as if we've already talked about the lack of black and white, the shades of gray in a pregnancy or in any other medical condition. But the same can be said, it's not the case where every single drug is for one thing. And so you can easily say, well, these drugs might lead to abortion, so we can't use them at all. That would really get in the way of some of your patient care.
Yeah, I mean, there's medications that are used for multiple different problems that may or may not be pregnancy related. And women who show up to a pharmacy and have a prescription are being told they need to prove that it's not being used to achieve an abortion. And that means their healthcare is delayed and possibly serious problems. Sometimes it may be that a woman is already experiencing a miscarriage and needs help completing that to avoid having serious problems like infection or ongoing bleeding. And they're told, no, you can't have that because you might be having an abortion. And there's a blurry line there that can really be intrusive. And it isn't simple. I think the biggest problem with this law and with the understanding of some people like Tim Michaels is that they're thinking this is extraordinarily simplistic. People train for a decade to become an obstetrician or any other kind of physician. We're not sitting around drawing and coloring books during that time. There's a lot of stuff we learn. So they don't know, and we do. And why can't they trust the physicians?
And not only do we train for years, but science and medicine are always changing as we get more information, and it's evolving. And that's why we can't legislate medicine. It sounds like a good idea from a simplistic standpoint, just make this a law. But look what happens with some of these laws. First of all, it often takes years to pass, and then they sit on the books for, I don't know, the entire length of your state's existence since 1849, like this old abortion law. So you can't, it's not, the legal system is not nimble enough to handle this. And that is why it is absolutely necessary, whether we're talking about reproductive health or starting a new blood pressure medication, it is absolutely necessary that we let doctors do their jobs so that they can take care of us.
And actually, Kristen drew the parallel to me that the Packers are playing the 49ers to open up the preseason. The 49ers as in 1849, you know, the gold rush year, which is in our history books, our musty, dusty history books, is where the current Wisconsin state abortion ban dates back to, long before women can vote, when you know, the black women and black men were still considered property. And Tim Michaels and many others are embracing a law from that era. Kristen, just to talk about the prescription medications and medications overall, we're really in danger of, you know, people want this to be a black and white issue on abortion, but we're getting dangerously close to contraception and whether people have the right to contraception. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, we're going to get beyond whether we're banning something at contraception or even at fertilization, which is a shade of gray. I know, Kristen, many people have long since forgotten that from eighth grade biology.
Well, yeah. Were you even really paying attention in eighth grade? When I learned about this in eighth grade, it was a very uncomfortable environment. I remember it well. I talked with my kids about it. But contraception, we know, is a target because Clarence Thomas literally said it was. So I think contraception is definitely something that we need to be concerned about. And that is something that over 99% of sexually active people have used at one time or another in our lifetimes. So that is necessary, and it affects us all. And with regards to fertilization, I think it's important to keep in mind that fertilization happens naturally, and often implantation doesn't happen. So we can only guess how often fertilization happens, and that fertilized early embryo just passes out of a woman's system without implanting, just because it just does. So if you're, I mean, I don't want to get into an argument about like, when does life begin? But if you're talking about fertilization, you have to acknowledge that a lot of fertilized eggs go unfulfilled just because of nature.
Exactly. Again, it's just, that's the biology of it. You can say all you want, you know, that you want to protect all life. But if you're talking about protecting everything that could potentially be, we are, again, moving back into parody territory and the old Monty Python song about every sperm being sacred. And you wouldn't want to waste any of that. We can't let ourselves be dragged, you know, to that point, because not only do we get into silly season there, but Dr. Helms, we're talking about getting into the silly season about, are we the degree to which we're tracking women's behavior? Mm-hmm. I mean, you would dare say
concerning.
Yeah. Hunting their behavior and doing so more than ever through technology, through tracking of what they put on social media.
Yeah, and there's been suggestion that women should immediately delete any menstruation tracking apps that they have, because somebody could tell that you weren't on your cycle. And like, because women use those to keep track of when they will or won't have a period. And that has been suggested, to get rid of those apps. Don't talk about anything on Facebook. Don't search for anything on Google, because that could be used as evidence. We're surveilling women in a way that smacks of a police state. It is terrifying that our personal bodily functions are going to be looked at, measured, and tracked by people who want to make sure we're not violating their idea of what my body is for.
Even location services. You know, if you're near an abortion clinic and your location services are turned on, you can be identified there. Yet we don't track men who are going to strip clubs or, you know, some of these other devious things that are happening. It's only happening to women. Explain that.
The headline this week about the mother and daughter in Nebraska, the headline says Facebook turned over a mother and daughter's chat history to police, resulting in abortion charges, a stark example of how digital footprints will be utilized in a post-Roe America. And so if you want to buy into this notion that that's fair game, like you just said, Kristen, careful what you wish for, because, you know, it can be turned on you when somebody else is in power and wants to, you know, target some other kind of behavior. And that's,
but I think it's really terrifying how much this is being aimed exclusively at women. I mean, we aren't looking at this happening to everybody. Let's be honest. This is happening to women. And it's in 1849, when this law was written, women were essentially property. They couldn't vote. They couldn't, you know, move around. They couldn't get a job. So that's what we're basing this on. Are we trying to go back there? I don't want to. Not my plan.
So where do we ultimately want to be? We're talking obviously about decisions that are going to be made in this election cycle. But we will most likely, because of gerrymandering, still have a legislature in Wisconsin that is Republican controlled. We don't know what the balance in Congress is going to be like, but Kristen, what is the optimal, the best likely scenario in the short term? And then what is it that you and the Committee to Protect Healthcare and others are ultimately working toward?
The best likely scenario in the short term, I think, is really difficult to predict, because just like 2 years ago, everything is different. So when we were voting for a president in the middle of a pandemic and we didn't know how we were going to be able to get to the polls and were people going to vote by mail and who were the compelling candidates and why, it's difficult to know how that's all going to go down. Traditionally in a midterm, this would be a big Republican year. But is that going to be the case, especially with this attack on reproductive rights? I think it's really hard to tell. So given that, and the fact that I am an optimist, and I really believe that we are all going to try to converge and, you know, just be good neighbors again, despite our differences, which make us beautiful, I really believe that we can make a difference by engaging, by holding our legislators accountable, by voting thoughtfully, and really, instead of just reading headlines, really thinking about what's below the headlines. What does this mean for us and for our country? And I'll let you handle the Committee to Protect Healthcare piece, because you're the boss.
Yeah, where do you, as Wisconsin state lead, want to go with this?
We really want to back candidates and bring the conversation forward so that people realize that voting matters, and that if this is something that matters to you as, you know, a potentially pregnant person or somebody who cares about anybody who might become pregnant, that this has got to be something you consider pretty strongly in your voting, and that you can't just think about what's happening to yourself. This is, I think Kansas was a great example of how people went, nope. I really, really hope that that is going to repeat itself everywhere.
That is certainly what a lot of people are looking to see, is that it's not so much on policy, but on what government can do to you personally. Dr. Ann Helms, mm-hmm. Dr. Kristen Lyerly, such a pleasure. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend, both of you.
Thank you so much.
Mahalo, Pat.
We'll wrap up Radio, allegedly
from
Dad Shirt
to
Friday after this.
We're your home for news, talk, and sports on 98.9 FM and WXCO 1230 AM.
Because every sperm is sacred, every sperm is great. If a sperm is wasted, God gets quite irate.
All right. It's there's times I feel like we're sliding toward the movie Idiocracy, and then there's times it's even worse than that. It's a Monty Python picture that we're living in these days. But again, my thanks to the good doctors for helping us understand that this election, probably unlike so many others, has so many different dimensions on which somebody might vote. It used to be so easy to just say, well, I'm a Democrat, so I always vote for the Democrat, or I'm a Republican, so I always vote for the Republican, or conservative, liberal, progressive, moderate, whatever. And now it's, I might agree with this candidate on a whole bunch of this, but, you know, and the but could be like Kansas voters did on abortion, or it could just be that, again, I like a lot of, say, their economic ideas, but why are they still coddling, you know, somebody like Donald Trump, who might be peddling nuclear secrets to the Saudis or something like that? And it's why that search warrant execution that took place at Mar-a-Lago this week, it is on par with each of the January 6th committee hearings, in that, you know, each time was a different revelation where, sure, a whole lot of Trump critics are going, see, I told you so. But where everybody else is saying, oh, wait a minute, he was doing what? He said what? He did, you know, look at the fake electors part of it that people thought was just kind of something spontaneous that happened on a December morning, when in fact it was being plotted well before the election. And so whatever these documents are that, you know, Trump and company took away from the White House and that were being seized this week to get them, you know, back into secure hands, you had an attorney general in Merrick Garland who was really feeling the heat about, you know, whether he had done this all on the up and up. And finally, you know, had to break his silence this week and say, yeah, it was done. It had to be done. And it was done, you know, with him knowing about it. And so here's a little bit of what he had to say about that.
I personally approved the decision to seek a search warrant in this matter. The department filed the motion to make public the warrant and receipt in light of the former president's public confirmation of the search, the surrounding circumstances, and the substantial public interest in this matter.
There's been a lot that's been said about it, but I think it was said best in a meme that was put up. I don't know if you remember, is it Diana Rigg played Queen Oleana on Game of Thrones? And there's a great clip from there that's going around going, tell Cersei, I want her to know it was me. And that was Merrick Garland yesterday. It's like, no, I wasn't left out of the loop. I did this because it needed to be done. These were classified documents that need to be protected the way that classified documents should, because as I had said yesterday, folks need to be mindful that the presidency does not belong to a single person, just like the country, the government does not belong to a single person, which means there are, you know, rules and standards to be followed to guarantee safety and security for all of us. It was great to have Kirk Bankstead on earlier in the show to talk about Mandela Mash, the new lager coming out from the Minocqua Brewing Company to commemorate his winning the Senate Democratic primary, and that he'll now go up against Merrick Garland. Not to step on what Kirk does over in Minocqua, but being that I'm located here in beautiful Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, we have our own local brew that had an event yesterday. And so I wanted to tip my cap to everybody at Line and Kugels. We were down at the Liney Lodge in Chippewa Falls yesterday. If you've never been, definitely put it on your road trip list. It's a beautiful place. Lots of beer, lots of variety, and it marked the return of Summer Shandy. And not Summer Shandy, I'm sorry, Sunset Wheat. Summer Shandy is what I've been drinking lately. Sunset Wheat is the brew that has been gone for the past few years here. And I was more than ready to come back. Did you have some IPA line you were going to drop on me there, Luke?
No, I was going to ask if it was just Summer Shandy or not. So that's why I was looking for the clarification, because I thought I saw the Facebook post yesterday that you were there.
It was the release party for Sunset Wheat, but you know, all of the brews, of course, are there on tap along with Summer Shandy, and you know, my favorite from this year, which is the Canoe Paddle Kolsch, which is another just really nice, light, crisp beer.
Very good beer. Yes, I like the Kolsch a lot. Kolsch is a great summer beer. There's a local brewery here in Madison that makes an excellent one too, but Liney's Canoe Paddler is a summer favorite of mine.
Well, I'm always going to have that hometown bias toward Liney's, but this was my first experience knowing, you know, that it was a Kolsch, having never heard of it before. So now, of course, I'm intrigued and want to see what other Kolsches are out there.
There's a one barrel commuter Kolsch up here. And if you ever go to Door County in Egg Harbor, I believe, one barrel also has a tap room up there. And so you can get the commuter Kolsch up in Door County and in Madison. They got tap rooms in both, and it's an excellent Kolsch.
Oh, nice. Brewers were off yesterday. They are in St. Louis for three games tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday afternoon. Eric Lauer is pitching tonight. And so the Brewers hope to at least get back into a tie with the Cardinals or, you know, get in a position to be atop the NL Central again before they play four games next week against the Dodgers, and then three next weekend at Wrigley Field. So
the Cardinals lost last night too, so the Crew are only a half a game back. So if they win tonight, they are back on top in the NL Central.
So here we go. Game on, kids. After the Summer Shandy event at the Liney Lodge, Sunset Wheat. Thank you. I should get like all the little, I've got the canoe paddle and I've got the taps, and right now this is very Wisconsin-esque, you know, look behind me, and maybe I should just go ahead and turn this into a Liney Lodge. What do you think?
There we go. We got to talk to him sponsorship. We'll see what we can do. And they'll put a little, maybe eighth barrel in the room back there. You get a little tap handle and then boom, sponsorship it is.
All right. Well, Dick Leinenkugel, you are on notice. I will be in touch with you about doing something along those lines. After the Sunset Wheat release party, it was back to the neighborhood where we had our, I don't want to say our neighborhood street party or block party, because it wasn't really a party, because our street isn't as young as it used to be. When we moved here, we had a four-year-old and a six-year-old, and you know, all the other little kids on the neighborhood, they'd run up and down and play and everything. And well, now a lot of folks on the street are, you know, either retired or certainly talking about it. And we used to have these monster parties. One neighbor, Art, has a slope down to the lake. He'd line it with plastic, and we'd have a slip and slide party where you'd run, you know, and slide into the lake from there. We're a lot more mellow now. We just all gathered in somebody's driveway yesterday, and everybody brought potluck, you know, had your broccoli salad and whatnot. It was still nice, but and we were reminded we are no longer the oldest young people on the neighborhood. We've now crossed the line. We're now the youngest old people in the neighborhood. And we realized, you know, we're okay with that, as long as we got our Sunset Wheat to toast the sunset with. Thanks for joining me this week. We will see you next week for Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great weekend.